This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
All right. Thank you to our sponsors this evening and continued support from Fire Engineering. This is, I don't even know what number of podcasts is, but I will be honest that I was working the podcast board, and we did not record this one. So we have kind of a repeat guest tonight. Hopefully everybody will be able to hear this one when it comes out. And Anthony is doing a much better job of running the board than I did the other night. So welcome everybody in. We're going to touch on obviously a few subjects tonight, but our main focus is going to be about training and getting the buy-in from not just your members, but, you know, even in some cases, the organization. That can always be a challenge. But let me get started with introductions. And something I want to make sure we do, because I know there is a lot going on in the fire service right now, from a training conference standpoint, just some absolutely just incredible opportunities that are all over the United States. And I hope that you at least, you know, take in one of those. We'll kind of touch on conferences and stuff a little bit later on, and I'm going to plug some. But my name is Todd Edwards, 30-plus years with Atlanta Fire Rescue, over 40 years in the American Fire Service as a whole. Operate Fire Life Training Associates now and work part-time for Dawson County Fire at the same time. So obviously a pretty full plate, and excited to kind of see where this one goes this evening. So let me start with our my other co-host tonight, and I'll go ahead and have Anthony introduce himself. Go ahead, Russ.
Anthony Rowett, I'm a captain with the Mobile Fire Department in Mobile, Alabama. Started out as a volunteer before that in northern New Jersey. Been here coming up on 14 years. Operate Port City Fire Training, and when we get into the conferences, we'll kind of talk about how all of us became friends and that benefit of it. But through all that connection, got to do a lot with Todd and a lot of the people we've had on this show as guests and the guests tonight through that. So excited to get this conversation going tonight again, even though it didn't record last time.
Very good, and I'm excited about our guests. I've had the honor and privilege, me and his entire cadre were able to host a really unique training event last year in a vacant high school in Alabama, and it was one of the coolest things that I ever got to be a part of, and I'm not going to take any of his thunder, so Captain Chief, you got somebody ranked up. I don't know what you are for, bro. So go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. My name's Shane Bentley. I am a firefighter, first and foremost. So I'm a firefighter from a little northeast, little department northeast Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, about an hour north. I've been in the fire service going on right over 20 years now. Last month was 20 years, so, and you blink and it's gone. So enjoy training, enjoy the fire service, the ups, the downs, the goods, the bads, every part of it. There's nothing about it that has ever made me want to leave it, and I'm just glad to take and be able to be involved with such a good group of people, friends. That's been my goal for the last 5 years, is to meet as many people as I can and learn from as many people and continue being a student. So it's just it's a privilege to be on here tonight with you guys.
Well, I appreciate that. And Shane, I know sometimes it's hard to put out plugs, but I'm going to kind of encourage you, because you have an event coming up in just a couple weeks in Dalton, Georgia, Could you kind of quickly, because the names that you got coming in to teach a multitude of programs are absolutely incredible. I still plan on trying to get up there. My schedule's changed a little bit, but could you talk about what's coming up in Dalton, Georgia in the a couple weeks from now?
Yeah, it's actually next week, kicks off next Monday at 8 o'clock, the 14th, the Bears of the Oath, number 4. Guy asked me today, he said, so y'all been doing this for 4 years? I said, well, yeah, no. I said, under this trade name, I said, we've been doing it right under 2 years. I said, so this is the fourth one we've done and been very fortunate to have the success and the friendships from everybody that comes to make it happen. People don't, I know you guys do, but people don't realize what it takes to make something like this happen. And you're exactly right. It's all the guys that's coming to draw. That's what draws the students. And you got Rob Ramirez kicking it off first thing Monday morning, followed by Jay Hurley. He's going to do his first through mindset. Arthur Ashley's going to finish it out on Monday evening. And then you're going to go to Tuesday, Nick Peppard, Blake Stinnett, and then Corley Moore is going to close it out Tuesday afternoon, and that'll wrap up the lectures for this conference. And then Wednesday and Thursday, Chief Starnes, Andy Starnes will be there with Insight Fire Training doing his tactical thermal imaging, and that's probably the one I'm most excited about is one just to be in his presence again, just to hear him talk, because he's such a good guy. But what he does with thermal imaging and the class and the scenario, especially search and rescue and the engine work that he incorporates into it, that gets me really excited. So, and then we'll finish it out on Friday with our homemade classes that we do with all the guys that's made Bears of the Oath what it is, and that'll be one of the two classes. It'll be Uncle Don's Engine Truck School and then Rid or Die. And we'll finish up Rid or Die on Friday night. That'll finish it out for the week, and we're going to take October off. Because like you said a few minutes ago, there's so much going on right now. So we're just going to take and we got several classes we've been working on, and 6 months between conferences is just not enough time. So we're going to skip a conference and take it off, and we're going to work on some new classes that we've been wanting to put together, and we can't do that without being able to all of us to get together and make them happen. So there's some pretty neat classes coming. I know me and Todd talked about it, and Anthony as well. The realistic side of live fire training is a lot of times it pushes the envelope, but it's the thing about it is when you have a coordinated group that, in my opinion, is some of the best around, you can do that. And that's what really, I think that's what, and I know we're going to talk about that, the training side of it tonight, but to me is, I don't know why we steer away from realistic fire training, and it doesn't have to be the most aggressive the first time, but you got to get people to understand what they're really responsible for when they go to work. So it's we got some neat stuff coming up and looking forward to it.
Great. Yeah. And I think Shane's group, the Bears group, has done an incredible job here in the metro Atlanta area. For guys that are, they're nearby or have thought about attending something, follow them and keep an eye out on some things they're doing and planning and stuff like that. So very, very impressive group of guys, not just about Shane. I'm glad he said that because anybody that's doing this work it's about a whole team of people to make all these things happen, from sponsors and people who truly love the fire service. And I think those are some things that we can all take away from that. So I want to get this kind of kicked off tonight for everybody. As you know, if you've listened to any of our shows, we don't spend a lot of time bullshitting around. We kind of dive right into some things. So when I was kind of going back over some of the things we had talked about that we didn't record, but I wanted to kind of dial us in. I thought during our conversation before, we got a little all over the board, but I kind of wanted to dial in on one subject matter. And we've talked about this before, but never as in detail, I think, that we're going to try to hit tonight on training and getting buy-in. And really, it sparked me. I was listening to Corley this morning while I was at my desk, and he was doing weekly scrap with Steve up there in Michigan. I always butcher that man's name every time, so I'm not even going to try. But they were talking about some training things, and I thought, man, we're going to dial in on that tonight. And I think that's just such a it's the weirdest subject in the world at times, because there's so many avenues and there's so many perspectives on training, and we tend to forget the beginning. We want to jump right into a week-long conference, or we want to jump right into FDIC, and really, to me personally, training starts with self and then company and then department. And I'm just giving you guys my 2 cents on this. So I want to start, and I want to start with Ro here. I guess it's kind of an odd question because I think the answer is very obvious, but I'm hoping that one of the three of us will say something that will spark somebody or help somebody get, you know, ass off couch and get back engaged with some training things. So, Roette, just your 2 cents on the overall importance of training our firefighters. I'm not talking about rookies. I'm talking about guys got 15 years in all the way to guys got 5 seconds in. So if you can give us a little, maybe give everybody listening some pointers, some advice on how important it truly is.
Well, I think it's the most important thing we do, because the most important thing overall we're going to do is our response. That's all we're here for. Everything else is just coming along with it. But at the end of the day, the only thing we're here to do is respond. And whether it's EMS, fire, whatever their citizens are calling for, the only thing we're here to do is to respond to it and solve the problem. And the best way we can improve and make sure that we're providing the best service to the people we serve is to constantly train. Even if you're working on something, it's a day you're working on something that it's your best skill. It's where you're in your comfort zone. Doing it again, doing it in a different building is still going to improve your skill set. Then you go into another day and you're doing something you haven't touched in a while. It's going to improve your skill set. It's just about getting better. You don't have to do the most intense thing every single day, the most complex thing every day. It's going to come down to basics when you get on scene. So we can train on the basics too a lot of the time and still improve the fire department, improve our response. Start with your, like Todd said, start with yourself and your crew. My biggest concern is my company. That I can't control the other companies. I'm not there to do their training every day. I'm not their officer, but I am the officer of my company. It is my job to make sure we're prepared, to make sure we give the best response we can when the citizens call 911 that day, the next day, whenever. So that's going to be my focus when we go to work, is we have to train. Every day we come in, we've got to get better at something. That's the goal. We come to work, everything else is just, it's just part of it. The cleaning the station, it's part of it. But the number one goal every day, the best responses we can do when the citizens call, and improve on at least one thing every day, we have to get better. If you get better at one thing every day, just a little bit better, when you compound that across the year or across your years of service over your career, look at how much better you're going to get over that amount of time. And then one day, it might just be that one day where all of it ends up paying off, and then it's all worth it. So always go in. It's just an easy mindset. Get better at one thing every day.
And then, I like that mind. I really like that mindset. Sometimes we tend to overwhelm with, hey, let's go learn how to rappel off this 40-story building, and the guy can't tie his shoes. So there's a lot of really, you know, cool things out there, obviously. But, you know, getting good at what your company does, if you're on an engine company. And I'll even go one step further before I ask Shane to chime in here. I never wanted my guys to be good. And I think one of our biggest damn issues in the fire service is that we tend to lower the bar instead of raise the bar. If we're getting the hose off in 45 seconds, that's good. I want to be great. I want to have the hose stretch the door in 30 seconds, 28 seconds, 27 seconds. And that should be and that's what we mean by raising the bar on a consistent basis. Not beating guys up, not doing unrealistic time sets, but really raising the bar, because I guarantee everything we do, we can do just a little bit quicker, a little bit smoother. And I think the fire service as a whole, we get very, and I will touch on this in a little bit, we get very trendy with whatever is popular on the Book of Faces or whatever is popping up on Instacrap, and then we jump all over that for a while, then we shy away from that, and we jump back on it, and we shy away from it. And so if we can focus, if I'm on engine company, let's focus on engine company operations. You know, let's be good, and then let's be great, and constantly strive to be better each and every time we roll out the door, and that it only comes through training. Shane,
yeah, and
you,
all your training too doesn't. I was gonna say, Todd, like
I'm
all
sorry.
Your training doesn't have to be some planned drill either.
Yeah,
you know, one of the best.
Now we'll come back.
Get good. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say we're gonna touch on that too.
Okay.
A little bit later on, but I definitely have that listed this on some things we can be doing. But let me let Shane chime in on the importance of training real quick.
So the over the last several years, that question pops up. It's a very common question, and it's always, you know, it gets related to, well, how do you take and overcome that group of people that don't want to train, that don't look forward to going to work? And I finally said, you know what? I said I had to sit down and think, how many people am I actually responsible for? You know, so I have to start with my family and my kids. Like me and Anthony was talking about before we went on the air, we got a lot of daughters. I got, you know, and one son. And so, but I got thinking about that, and I said, so everybody that I work with, I took it as a personal response, because I'm personally responsible for every one of their family members. So if I sat there and I multiplied that by, you take 24 guys, and you go and you sit and look at all of their family members. Well, I came up with a number of 136 that I was immediately responsible for, just like my own. So I took it personally, and I did not want to disappoint not just only the guys that I work with, but I did not want to disappoint their families. I didn't want to go to their families and say, hey, your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter has gotten hurt, and I could have prevented that. Just by being 1% better every day. If you try, a simple goal, people say 1% better every day. Well, yeah, like Todd said, it's trendy to say that. But 1% better every day or Anthony said it, but 1% better every day is, guess what that is? And you do that 365 times, you just got 365% better. So I never wanted to be the person that could have disappointed them or dropped the ball on that and had to tell them that. And then Anthony talked very avidly about it last month when he was doing a class we all attended. The tradition and heritage that came before him at his company in the seat where he rides, right? So you take the trends out of it, you take the Facebook and the Instagram, all of that bullshit out of it, guess what you get? You get people that are still going and responsible for doing the job. And so my thing with that is guess what? Other people are not as confident. They don't have the training that I have, or they don't have the years of service. So they come into it and they're led by somebody else. They're afraid to step out and say, hey, I want to be a part of this. I want to learn how to do this. Or they just simply don't want to stand out and go, hey, please explain this to me one more time. Show me this, because we've done a really good job in the fire service over, I know, the last 20 years since I've been involved in it, browbeating the shit out of each other and making people feel like crap because they don't know that. But what I found to come with that is there's a lot of people that do that to others just to cover up their own insecurities. So it's just creating that culture to me was, you know, finding the weak link. And I always try to put myself out there as the weak link because I didn't know someone personally or enough to take and find out or invested in them enough to know what their thoughts were. What do they want to be in the fire service? What really gets them going? And the thing is, all it takes is one good class, one good instructor, a group of people. And when somebody does something that they're absolutely terrified of doing, and then you see them complete it, and the courage that they gain, and then they go back, and it's just that 1%, and they get better and better and better and better. And then they find out that training is a culture of simply a step process of becoming better. But most people don't want to do it. I found out because they don't know how, or they're afraid they're going to look bad in front of others. And that's probably one of the most biggest things in the fire service that just takes and boils my blood, because we are a victim of our own service and we do it to each other. And I don't, and you know, I don't understand why that continues to happen when we got the best job in the world, right? We get to help people, and but it requires effort, and you get paid to do it. I mean, you absolutely get paid to do it. You came to the fire service. I promise you, fire service didn't reach out and say, "Hey, man, come over here and join up. Come up. You interested in doing this?" Somehow you got there, but the expectations of what's expected of you is it should be very, very adamant in understanding what our job responsibility is and what we're responsible for doing every time we go to work. And that's
yeah.
I think that's easy to do. I think you have to manipulate people, but most of the people that you manipulate to get them to see that, guess what? You really, I found it's the ones that really are shy to it, that really blossom the biggest once they get out of their circle of uncomfortability.
Yeah, and I think you brought up an interesting point that sometimes the fire service is their own worst enemy. I think we at times have made people shy away from training because of the way they're looked upon or treated. And I encourage everybody in your own organizations, at conferences, in my group, you know, with the fire life programs we do and the trainings we do, we have some very, very simple rules for myself and everybody involved. And it's a student first mindset. And if we're not there for the students and ensuring they're getting it the right way and helping, or I've even been in class where I was teaching and recognized somebody wasn't getting it. And it wasn't, they weren't getting it because they weren't getting it. They were getting it because of the way I delivered it. So simply getting another student involved or another instructor to step in, maybe all it takes for a student to learn a skill or refine some skills. And I think we have to get away from that old adage of, you know, beating each other up on the training ground. I'm not going to say the organization, but I had a phone call last week where a certified new member quit because of the way he was being treated during his training. Literally was just pounced upon, I guess. I don't want to, you know, I'm not at liberty to say, but I actually had to stop myself from sending an email to the organization because I know everybody was involved. And it was very disappointing to see that we're still doing this throughout, you know, at least, you know, in parts of the country, this is still a normal thing. And that, to me, is something we've got to be just stopping in its tracks every chance we get. So I think you guys have both said the importance of training and how vital that is. And that kind of, I want to kind of circle, you know, back kind of our title then and keep this, you know, hopefully we'll kind of get it, it'll come together, but I wanted to kind of answer this question. So Shane, you had kind of mentioned about, you know, who you're responsible for, and we look at our families along with our firefighters. And then, you know, that next step is we're also responsible for, you know, 100,000 citizens or 20,000 citizens or, you know, whatever the case is, depending on our organization. How do we get, and I'm going to start with Shane on this one, how have you gotten buy-in from the guy who would rather spend 23 out of his 24-hour shift sitting on his ass, taking naps, and watching Netflix?
Two things. I had to manipulate. I had to take and manipulate pretty much myself into putting myself in a position that I absolutely would not do professionally or mentally. And I had to take and bring myself to the level to where I had to get to where I can manipulate him to where he got past the fact of what the hell is he doing. And if I could ever get in and manipulate him enough to take and get him to see where I, like, hey man, this guy's, he's cool. He can, you know, get in that personal mindset with him. And then you just start taking in, instead of putting a name on it, instead of taking, it's like last night, I sent Anthony a text message immediately. Sent me what I needed. But little things such as, hey man, let's go, when you start talking about things, well shit, let's go do it. And but so getting him interested in going to do it versus not being scared to do it The fact is, he doesn't realize how much courage he's losing in himself for what he's the enjoyment of training, because it's just like playing video games or watching TV or somebody that wants to read and study all the time and better themselves. Guess what? The fulfillment they get out of that, they can get out of training to become better too, hands-on. And a lot of times I've had to do it, which has made me a better person by putting myself in places and not giving up on other people. And I just manipulate the situation. I quit putting names on it. I quit calling it, let's go out and stretch lines. Let's go throw ladders, or let's go take in PT and gear. Now we're just taking, go out there, and I try to take and manipulate people into just getting their buy-in and get them talking about something and say, even though if they're not right, if you can get them to that point, you know how much you end up learning about these people and understanding why. Eventually, if you invest in them long enough, you find out why they're, and a lot of times just because it's wrong in my mind, or I don't buy into what they're doing, I learn why they are the way they are, and then it's kind of a meet in the road and mutual thing. But I have this concept in my mind about the fire service, and that is, like I said earlier, all of these guys that I work with, these girls that I work with, these ladies that I work with, that how can I expect them to be proficient at rescuing somebody else if we can't rescue ourselves? And search and rescue starts in the firehouse. And it hit me one day, just literally hit me, like, I was like, man. And so I had to go around and start getting to know everybody that I worked with a little bit more personal, a little bit more deeper, and build that trust into where when I say, hey, let's go out and try this. Well, let's go climb this ladder, which you should have known, but you didn't know that this guy's terrified of heights, and that's why he's always shied away from ladder training. But stretch anything off an engine for us is the essential for us, because we're not staffed with a functional truck company only. So we're the engine in the truck, and so. But I had to take and figure out what I had to do to take and manipulate these guys to start talking about anything possible, to start putting their opinions in. A lot of times it was not putting the names on the training. It was just going out and acting like you were effing off. And then you just kind of manipulate them until get them out there and get them involved. And if you can never get them talking, then you start to be defeating their insecurities. And then with others, then you always got that guy that knows, he watches everything, sees everything, but never lifts a hand on doing nothing. And the humility side of the fire service is sometimes we have to fail in our own insecurities, and guys are so strong-minded that they will take and go to the point of actually trying to do something in front of others. And I think they know that it's wrong. They continue to do it because there's somebody else that actually truly believes that. And then you have to sit and go, all right, now I've got to figure out how to take and get this guy to understand that what he just did was not correct, but he just influenced a lot of other people. That's how people get hurt. That's how and we have to be preventful in that. But it's all about building relationships to me to get success out of them.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with you, Shane. And I want to get Rowett's take on some things that he's utilized as far as trying to get buy-in. I mean, I know his company, obviously, down there in Mobile, and he's been very fortunate and blessed to have a pretty strong group of guys that don't mind going out drilling. So, but how are you getting buy-in from your organization? I know teaching down there for a few months, it was interesting to see the different dynamics of your organization, Anthony. I know some things you guys are trying new right now with the video, so if you could kind of touch on that, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so at the company level, I think one of the biggest things is what Shane said. You've got to take the time to learn your people, and if someone's shying away from it, try to figure out why. Are they just trying to sit in the chair because that's their comfort zone and they're afraid to fail in front of somebody, or are they just sitting in the chair because they're just there to collect a paycheck and they don't care? The guy that's just – he doesn't want to fail in front of everybody, you can find ways to motivate him. The guy that just picked collecting a paycheck, you're just going to have to force him to take part. And then the way to sell it's going to be doing it. Everybody likes to be successful. So if you can do a drill and you deep down you know you just learned something and you were successful at it, as that continues each shift, every tour you come in and you're continuing, you're seeing that you're getting better. Things are going better. you're improving, you're going to feel good about yourself. Everybody does have an ego. You like to be successful. So as that happens, they start to buy in more, and they're willing to do a little bit more. So like with us, I'll talk about the videos. We're not a super big job, but, you know, around 500 guys. So it's hard for us to do something all the time that just everybody gets the exact same thing. Like for you to come down when you did Breaking Barriers for the department, it took 9 days for you to cover everybody. So that's what we run into. So we came up with the idea of this training videos. And some of it I got from, you know, everything is all just stuff we passed on to each other. And I got the idea. We were in Pensacola, and I was talking to Champa, and he was telling me some stuff he's doing with some training videos at The Rock for FDNY. And I was like, man, that if it works on that big of a scale, that might help us with our issue of getting people the same exact training continuously throughout the whole job. So before I put the idea together, I went to some people that I look up to, some senior guys. Hey, what do you think? And if I get this approved, would you be willing to help? Because I thought the most important thing wasn't necessarily what we were doing, because if people aren't willing to watch the video, it didn't do any good. So you had to have buy-in from the fact of it's got to be respected people in the videos as well. So we came up with the idea to put training videos out, and our idea was they're all going to be short videos, no longer than 15 minutes. So it's very easy to capture a short topic and just say, hey, this is what we want you to do for the month. An engine video around the first of the month, and then halfway through the month, you get a truck video. We have an engine cadre, a truck cadre, and they put out things. They don't have to be super complex. Like the first one we did was just a review of the high-rise bundles, how to properly deploy an apartment stretch with 150 feet and a stairwell stretch with 150 feet, with little training tips that make your life easier, you know, thrown in there. And then things with ground ladders from the truck guys, different things with stretches. And it's able to put it out there, make that computer-based training a little bit more effective, because it's not some generic thing being put out by some company. It's very specific. It's our city, our job, our SOPs, our operations, and our people, and saying this is how we operate within our department. This is what we do, and you put it out. So that was how we went with that. The Chiefs loved it, and it's starting to get processed and put out now. But to me, you've got to find a way to give them success and then also to empower people. So again, what I learned kind of the hard way of someone saying, hey, man, just step back. You know, I got promoted. You guys know some of my guys, and they're real motivated. I'm blessed with who I work with. They come to work and say, hey, Cap, what are we going to train on today? I don't have to force them. So that's a benefit of a busier company with a reputation. The guy I took over the company from, he was known to train a lot. So it's always been that way since I've been on the job. Engine 3, the B shift. They're going to train. They're going to train all the time. They're going to train every day. It doesn't matter what time. If they see something, they're going to go do it. If they have a question, they're going to stop and do it. It doesn't matter if it's the middle of the night, they're going to do it. So people don't really transfer to us without the attitude of, I'm going to train. So if they're coming to us with a transfer request, that's what they want. If we get a recruit, it's a little different. We got to kind of feel out that personality and see how to motivate them to training. We just got a new recruit about 3 weeks ago, and he's been super into it. But what I've learned from senior guys that told me is when I first got promoted, like in my mind, I need to oversee all this training. I don't necessarily need to present it all, but I do need to see what's going on, evaluate the crew and how they're progressing. Well, now I just step back sometimes. We do what we're going to do for the day, and then I've got a guy, he's really good at teaching. He can present information and get you to understand it. You guys know Pettis pretty well. And I just say, hey, man, the day's yours. When we're kind of done for the day, hey, the day's yours. I'm going to go in the office. You do what you want, and then I'll come out. So I kind of step away, and he takes the younger guys, and he goes and works with them a little bit, where now they don't feel like they're being evaluated anymore. They can feel free to fail to get better, because they don't see their boss who fills out their eval form every quarter for their probation watching them until, you know, they actually show me the skill when he's already ensured they're going to be successful. They failed in front of him, not the guy evaluating them. And that gives them a little more confidence to work the skill and fail so that they can get better. It gives him the opportunity to work on how to teach people how to do all this for when he promotes. And it's just brought the crew together more. And it's not that I'm not involved. I do the training with him during the day, and then he just picks up with them a little bit, 30 minutes a day or so, you know, before we do our PT. He just takes them off to the side. A lot of times he just takes a hose over, hooks it up to the hydrant across the street because our rookie's new, and works with him on the different nozzle techniques and flowing and moving and talking about these different things so that he can improve the skill. But then when I evaluate it for his checkoff book, he's going to be successful, which is going to build him more into wanting to train in the future because he's had success. It's made him feel good. He's reached that level of success. He didn't fail. And then another thing I think is important, and this is really one of the big ones to me, and it's going to be the last one I talk about, but Todd, I learned it from you, especially I try to be doing this with when someone goes out and gets some training and they bring it back, because my guys go to different conferences and stuff, and they bring something back new to the station, or if we go to a class and, you know, from the department and it's something we haven't seen, when we come back to the station, I'm all about doing it first. I'm willing to fail in front of them. If I can fail in front of
you,
everyone's human. Everyone can fail. So if I fail in front of you, I'm telling you it's okay. It's okay to have the failure in training so we can identify, fix it. And then when the citizen calls 911, we don't have that failure. We've already addressed it because we took care of our job. We did what we were supposed to do. And that's the biggest thing. You got to self-identify your problems. You got to have an honest outlook and self-evaluation of you, your crew, your department, so you can train on the right things. Don't always train on the things that you're going to be successful. Go pat yourself on the back and go watch TV. Sometimes work on the thing you're going to fail, and you're going to have to work on this for a couple hours to address that failure you know is going to happen, because you don't want it to happen on the fire, man.
Yeah, and I both of you, I hope somebody could write really fast, because both of you just made some incredible tips and pointers about getting that buy-in. And I love one of the last things that Rowett said about we can't fail on the fire ground at 100%. I just got home a couple of days ago, and I was in Homewood, Alabama, doing a two-day ultra development. Second day is all hands on live fire. And one of the things I tell, and there's a lot more departments like the one Shane works for, a lot more departments like the Homewood, Alabama, and the Vestavia Hills, Alabama, and the Dawson County, Georgia, than there are of the Atlantas and the New Yorks and the Bostons and Chicago. There's thousands upon thousands of departments that they don't have an easy button. There's no 60 guys they can just have show up at a building fire. You know, they're going to show up with 15 to 20 people. They're going to tap all their resources, and they have to be – it's not even a matter of being good. They have no margin for error on their fire ground operations. I take a lot of pride in working and training with those kind of departments for that sheer reason, because there is no, hey, sorry, a second alarm for them is two other cities having to come in to help back them up. That's the kind of resources that a lot of departments throughout our country have. So the buy-in for me is understanding where our job is, our communities we work for. I'm a big believer, and guys have ever been in my leadership classes, I try to throw – you literally can use this in every scenario, is having those difficult conversations or having a conversation with the two guys that, you know, constantly bitch, moan, and complain about training. And having a conversation of why are they bitching and moaning about training. And what I really found out, to be honest, either they don't know why they're bitching about it or complaining about it, and it's typically not because they're lazy. A lot of times what I found is that their training experience has been so bad, so poor, so boring, they've kind of associated training as being those type of events, as just going through the motions, just going through the steps, just hitting the damn check boxes. And I think, again, as a whole, as the fire service has, you know, evolved and changes, our instructors need to evolve and change and try new avenues and find new ways to get people back involved with the training and the importance of it and where they're working at throughout the community. I'm going to kind of dial in on, because we kind of already hit on – I think that's probably the reason people shy away from training, because of their past experience with it. Either that is flat don't know, they don't want anybody else to know that they don't know, and that's fine too. But how, at the company level, Shane, how do you encourage guys to train? Or what are your recommendations? I'm not talking about your department. Let's step outside of your organization and what you do. You're coming into my four-station fire department, and I need a training officer to motivate the company on the importance of company training. How do you sell training now to an unmotivated group of guys? Not just one guy, but a group of guys. How do you sell training to the both the company level and the department?
Well, so that happened to me last year, about a year ago. The department not too far from here asked the same question. Three stations, one state over, and I was like, man, that's easy. That's so easy. And it hit me on the way there. I said, man, I don't know none of these dudes but one guy. And it was recently after we just had a very successful, if you'll remember, Todd, I was sending you the pictures the next day after. Four people, this is what we did. This is how long we worked to make two-man engines successful. And then I kept wondering, how long is it going to take for that call to come? And my gosh, it happened on a Sunday morning at 10:15, and there was three boys in the house, and they're all out, and they lived. And we done it with four people. And so but it hit me on the way there. How in the hell am I going to convince them through my excitement how proud I am of my company and how much training went into this? And so that night in the hotel, I took and created a play-by-play picture video. But what I did is I sat and I watched in the room. I made it, and I let it loop twice. And I watched people's reaction. I watched the company officers. I made sure that I suck with names. If I don't call you by your name, I'm going to call you probably Dick or Bubba. And the thing is I had to start disciplining myself to watch. I wanted to watch the company officers. I wanted to watch the fire chief. I wanted to watch the guys on the engine. So I made sure when I got there, I showed them my excitement about being there, and they showed me what trucks and engines they rode on. And so I could associate my mind while I was viewing them. So I played this video, and I started it out. That's all. I introduced myself, told them thank you for being here, and I sat there and I played it, and I played it, and I played it, and they said, play it again. And then they started taking in. They started saying this and saying this and saying this. So I'm sitting here watching them. My mind's like on super ADD, and I'm going, oh, shit, now look at them go. And then I started noticing the ones that were not involved. And it hit me just like a damn lightning bug for the old Georgia Power commercials in the 80s. Zing, there it is, right? These guys right here, there's the target. So, and I simply slipped in the back door through them and found out why they weren't buying in. And you were right. You were right in what you said a minute ago. It was the whole factor of their impression of who or what they thought they should be doing or their insecurities. It's only one of the – there's not very many reasons why people don't or not excited to go to work and go, woohoo, let's go gear up, let's go do it, right? And so with that, we sat there and I started watching. And then I started – and I always use – I know it's like a broken record, but I always use the manipulation process. If you can take and manipulate people to take and engage their thoughts, then be vocal and show videos, a video over and over and over, and you make it relative to the three boys that were in the bed, to the three boys outside with their mother, and even the dog is the one that saved them from – it was, you know, it gets a story and gets them talking. But the thing is, I learned with that, to get the buy-in from them, I had to listen to what they were saying to pick up the good, the bad, and the wrong. And so then I'd have to be very quick in processing what was being said and making sure that they understand the focal point of why our job is what it is. But it's like the segregation, you know. There's always that group. It doesn't matter if it's the small departments like where I work or the 500 departments where Row works or where, you know, downtown where the company that you came from. There is that somebody. And there is still, the longer it goes unaddressed before somebody reaches out to them or starts digging into them to buy into them, the longer it goes unaddressed, the sooner you're going to lose them. And everybody, I truly believe this, like Anthony said, you can make them train, right? Because you can do that. But I don't want to make them train to punish them. I want them to train because I want them to take it and to learn about themselves. And so I started watching those dudes. I started watching what they were saying, what they were doing. The guys that were taking and not responsive, I was watching their emotion. And I started, and then I started reading about emotions and how people's non-reactive reactions. I got kind of deep with it and started talking to other people about it. And then I just went in to start manipulating them and asking them what they thought. And I had to find a common bond and common ground real quick. Sometimes you have to do it really quick within 2 or 3 minutes. Sometimes you got 2 or 3 shifts. Sometimes you got 2 or 3 months and you got the new guy. But the point is we get the opportunity to be everlasting on somebody. And what we get to do, as much as you guys more than myself, but we get to take and be influential on a bunch of people. And whether I get them there, I want them to know that if I don't get them at that point right there, that I intrigued them enough to where if it didn't happen that day or the next day or when I leave, they know they can always call. And I'll be honest with you, I've gotten more callbacks from the people that I didn't expect getting callbacks from. And there's three of them actually. One of them works in my department now. Two of them work on that help us out in with the training that we do. But it was that manipulation factor. And that word, people hate that damn word, but it – manipulation is the same. I look at manipulation as a grab or a save. There's so many guys that I've just totally manipulated to take and get them to realize they don't even realize their own potential. All they need to know is somebody gives a shit about them. And if
right.
Once they know that, they will work 14 times harder than they did 2 days before they met you, just because they know you give a damn about them. That's all it is. And anybody, it's like a dog, man. The fire service is sometimes like a puppet and a dog. If you can take a dog, you can take an English bulldog and train him to run up a fence and jump over it. You can teach anybody to care and love about this job, but you have to be relative to them and you have to get to know them.
Yeah, and I think I couldn't agree with you more on selling a training program. And I want to get Rowett's take on that same thing.
I'm gonna say just find a way to make it personal to them. Like for me,
yes.
with our guys in the department, I use the same thing my mentor said to me. Most of us don't even live in the city we work in, let alone the area we cover. But we make it personal. Hey, these are you are responsible. They're your people for 24 hours. When you come to work. We don't get off duty for really anything. We get off duty if we're on a call, if we're at a drill that requires us to be off duty, we get assigned a special assignment or the truck's broke down. No other option to be off duty gets taken because we don't want anyone else coming into that area. But that area belongs to us. We take pride in that. We don't want anyone else making a run in our area. Those are our people for 24 hours. You make it personal, and then you start talking about it. I don't work in the best of areas. Like he told me, he said, man, if you don't save it, they don't have it. These people don't have insurance. That whole line of, well, insurance, that don't work for us. These people don't have it. So whatever you would do, then we make it personal. If it was your family, what would you do? That is somebody's family. They expect the same thing you do for your kids. That's what they deserve. That's what you do. You can have that same conversation. Maybe you don't know the area as well as I know the run area I work in, but you can still make it personable. Hey, that's somebody's kid. That's somebody's mom. Just what would you want if it was your family? What would you want if it was your kid, your mom? You can make it personable. Some guys I know with the local volunteers, their whole mission of getting their volunteer department to train and train and train a ton is, we live here. This is my family. It's not, I want to treat you to treat it like it's your family. You're going to respond on my family. I want everything good for my family. I want to make sure my family's taken care of. If you can get people to think in that mindset, it's personal now. It's very easy to motivate yourself when it becomes personal. So I think if you can get people to look at it on a personal level where it's, hey, if it's they live in that community, that's their neighbors, that's their friends, that's their family. Or if you just get people to think of it in that sense, that's someone's kid, and they mean just as much to that person as my kids mean to me. So they deserve everything I would do for my kids. And what I would want for my kids isn't just that 100% on the day that they need it. It's 100% on the day they need it and 100% every day leading up to it to be prepared for that call that you give them every chance they could ever possibly have. And if you get people to think on that mindset, you can usually get them to buy in and put the work in because it's real now. You've made it very real in their mind.
Yeah, and I love the personal aspect of getting buy-in. I think that is always a great tool in our tool bag to use. And it's amazing that, and again, I think guys get, it's easy to get bogged down in all the BS around us sometimes and forget why we're here, what we're really for, what we really exist. I mean, we only exist for one reason. The American Fire Service exists solely to save other people's lives. That has always been our job. It will always be our job. And sometimes we can forget that. The 5-year, 6-year guys have bad training events or never had the opportunity to attend good, solid training events. Sometimes going at looking at it from more of a personal side can really, enhance somebody's training desire more so than, hey, I can make you train, but I don't think guys are going to get a lot out of the make you train mentality. The other thing that I really, really promote, especially if you guys are trying to get, people listening, looking for ways to get buy-in, we actually have a program that we deliver on instructor development as well as how to make training great at the company level and department level. And it's been pretty successful. But one of the key teaching points in that program is really about consistency of training, and that's everybody I've talked to that has had training programs fail, the first question I always ask, well, when did you do training? And in most cases, well, we did a drill this week and we did 2 last month or we did 6, target solution classes. That consistency factor where guys are expected to train and wanting to train because they, they're expecting it. But that consistent message of the importance of training, the importance of buying in, that cannot be oversold of being consistent in the program. A friend of mine who is fairly new captain immediately ran into that issue at his house. And the first thing I asked him, I said, well, have you been delivering training every day? He goes, no, we took 2 or 3 shifts off, and then we got busy with this, and then we didn't do anything that day. And Tommy rolled around, and he wanted to get out and do a whole bunch of training. He didn't have the buy-in anymore. He had already lost the buy-in because the guys didn't believe he was going to be consistent with it. So my message with all that being said is find time in your day. Find time in your training calendars. Find time in your monthly, weekly, however you guys organize and time manage. That's got to be a priority in every aspect of your planning day. And that's how I approach it every day. I always approach every day as a training day or whatever the case is. And we'll kind of touch on that here in a second. So one of the big driving forces that I see a lot going on in a lot of departments is that because the world itself is so tech-driven, we've made training kind of the fancy tech way of doing training. I'm not bashing these other, and it's called something else. I ain't called Target anymore. It's called something else. But beside the point, great way to track, a lot of great content. Departments that really take it seriously, kind of like Mobile's doing, can add in their own content. But we can't allow the computer to replace the actual hands-on part of training. And I think the reason I say that is a computer can't answer direct questions that a student may have in most cases. There's no true interaction with a computer screen versus 4 guys sitting around the back of the rig talking about the hose. So there's a fine line on hands-on and computer. I think without even going into the computer base, I think all of you guys already agree with me on that. So one of the things that I really want to talk about is how do I make hands-on training not, you know, and I've seen guys, I worked with a captain years and years and years and years ago that he used training. He would call it training. I call it punishment. Working on 5-inch hose lathe is 2 sticks. His idea of working on 5-inch hose lathe was dropping 10 sticks, charging it, blowing deck gun, and then repacking 1,000 feet of 5-inch. That's no longer training when it's 90 degrees outside. That's punishment. So we have to understand the importance of hands-on, but when and how to deliver that. I want to start with Rowett on that because I know you guys do a lot of different things with your station, but I want you to kind of dial in hands-on. I think there's a misconception that all hands-on has to be this big, long, drawn-out drill of gear and swapping bottles and all that stuff. So if you can kind of dial in a little bit from your perspective, bro, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so I want to emphasize something you just said, too, because our department went through the same thing. We had a guy that was very, very high up our command staff that he – this was around the time frame. He was doing it before I hired him, but when I hired him, he was still in that position. And he used training as discipline. You get called to the training center, it was like, oh, man, what'd we do? And you got – he used training to discipline you. And the effects of that are still being – you still feel it today when you come to our job because every time someone gets called to a training division – held training event, it's like, oh, man, what do we do? What's going to get done to us? And it just lasted. It didn't go away when he retired. He's been gone a long time. And that's a lasting effect when you do that. So training can't be discipline. If you got to do some discipline, do what you got to do. Go have the hard conversation and do what you got to do. Discipline needs to be discipline. Training needs to be about improving, not about discipline. So I wanted to emphasize that with what you said. But so for us, some of the most common drilling people would probably call it that we do, we don't even look at drilling. We just go back to what the old timers used to, we all hear about. So the two captains on either side of me went on engine three are brothers. They both got 30 years on and their dad was a captain on engine three. And they always talk about, they can call him and ask him about a building and he'll say, here's where your hydrants are. Here's where your FDC is. This is where the stairwells are. He still remembers that he retired in 2000. Because every time they made an alarm, they stretched hose. So that's just what we went back to. We don't just go out and say, hey, let's do a stretch here unless we haven't done it in a while. We might do something with recruits and rookies as far as making sure they're stretching every day. We stretch on alarms. And that's a drill. I mean, do you need to stretch on every alarm? Probably not. But it makes it real. It adds reality to that evolution. It might be 2 in the morning. It might be 2 in the afternoon. You got out of bed, you got all your gear on, fast, in a hurry, made the quick response, sized up the building, figured out how much hose you need, and you made the stretch. It doesn't take long to put it back on the truck. You can't replace that. People talk about reps and reps and reps. That's yes, it's a rep, but it's reality. It was a real call, real emotion, real time, your run area, a building you can make a fire in. You can't replace that. That's the best rep you can ever give somebody. It's reality. So we do that, and then we're able to do little things where it might not be a long, drawn-out thing, but maybe we train a couple times a day because in the firehouse, we deal with some taller buildings. We deal with stairwells. We've got return stairs in our firehouse. We've got one stair that's got a well hole. Hey, get me a line here. Let's see how he does it. Okay, what if you would have done this? Okay, here's how you tie it off. All these little things you can do. Doesn't have to be a big 2-hour thing. Maybe that was 20 minutes, but he might come into play. You know, the next tour, the next day, that stretch might come into play. Building construction, go walk your run area. Now, for us, it's easy to walk the run area because a lot of the buildings are connected, but we'll park the truck. Just pick a block. We'll stand there, you know, go down there after dinner, get some ice cream or something, stand on the side of the road and sit there and say, okay, this is what you've got. You've got this store, middle of the row, fire in the rear. What are you going to do? Tell, you know, we move people up in positions if they're checked off. So if I'm off, my driver's acting captain. Hey, Jimmy, if I'm off and you got this middle of the road store, this is what you got, 2 in the morning, what's your call? Where are you guys in a position of rig? Which line are you going to stretch? What are you going to do? You can just talk through things. And like you said, Todd, that interaction, you can pass a lot of knowledge back and forth, and it's open to discussion, which makes it go even further. So little things. It doesn't always have to be this long, drawn-out 2-hour drill are super intense. Some of the things they're going to learn the most from is something like that. That the extension of the kitchen table. You're not sitting at the table talking about a fire anymore, but it's that same environment, but you're looking at a building in your run area and you're talking in that same way. Or you're talking about, hey, we had a fire in this building 5 years ago. This is what we had. Boom, 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 boom. I like building inspections. I know a lot of people don't like doing them. I like it. We get to get out in building as a crew, spend some time together, talk about a building, and we use those building inspections not to just check the box. We try to gain a tactical advantage while we're there. We stretch hose lines at building inspections when we can, when they let us, because you can't replace that. They know exactly how much hose they need now. It's easy. But now you know where the stairwells are. Maybe you spotted something that just said, man, this isn't good. If we make a fire here, we got to remember that. And that's come into play for us before. You know, so it doesn't always have to be this super long drawn out or super intense, you know, crazy drill that you had to put 2 days of effort just to come up with an idea for. Sometimes it's some of the simplest things are going to have the biggest impact. At the end of the day, it all comes back to the basics. So learn your run area, learn to do what you do, and be good at it. And that's where I stand with training my guys. It's not usually these long drawn out things. A lot of times it's a couple different shorter interval things throughout the day, so they're not beat down all day and dreading it. They get to come in and go, hey, what are we going to train on today?
Yeah, and I love everything and all the points you just made, bro. Shane, same thing for you. Same kind of question. You know, conducting hands-on without always being just, you know, just long, drawn out, we got to be out of service 3 hour event.
Same thing like Anthony said. I love the fire alarm. I love the inspection. I love the fire alarm because I better not say it like that. Let me rephrase this. They implemented a response in our county a few months ago is that we don't respond to fire alarms code. Well, the city that I work in didn't adapt that. Because what it did is it took away from what Anthony talked about, that realistic, responsive mindset, emotion, and feeling. And so I told my fire chief, I said, we're not doing that. Please do not implement that. I said, because we don't have a large company, and I need these guys to take – it took for a while to get them to buy into this. So if the occupants will let us, especially on commercial – we stretch, we raise the ladder, the aerial, we ladder the building. Whatever terminology you use at your department, we exhaust our first due means every possible chance we get. And then the what-if conversation that he was also talking about, if you stretch up through the well, or if you're taking in, what if you took this ladder and done this ladder? The what-ifs turned into so many different buy-ins. Because you're not going to get everybody to agree every time. So if they're not going to, I try to keep it to one rule. If we don't agree as a company, then we have to prove why we don't agree with it, and we have to figure out what's best, and we have to come to that agreement to say, all right, this is why we're not going to do it this way, and this is what led to why we're not going to do it this way. That's the rule. If you pull a what if, and it doesn't work, and you're going to argue with it, we're going to take and sit there, and we're going to figure out what works the best for us. And so, but the realistic drill is the realistic call with the realistic response. We had several people leave our department years ago when I got there, and it was the hardest thing, one of the hardest things I ever had to deal with, because they simply would not put their turnout gear on. Going to possibles, fire alarms, confirms, I didn't give a shit what it was. They were all the same to me. If you were prepared and you dressed for success every time, or even on the rec, the MVC, MVA, whatever you might call it, guess what? Even if there's nothing to it, if you got your bunker gear on, you got your pants, you got your helmet, you got your reflective vest, whatever it is you got on, every kid that's riding by and looking out the window at you, at that point in time, he puts his iPad down and he's not no longer watching SpongeBob. He's looking over there at his realistic view of his hero, and maybe, just maybe, in 18 years or 15 years, this kid grows up and wants to go be a firefighter because that impressionable mindset that he's seen of that fire truck or those guys standing on the side of the road that were dressed apart. And But the realistic drill is it. There's so many, there's a million different ways to train, but you can never replace the realistic response with the realistic drill. And if you want to pull the what if, guess what? Your what if better be validated. And if it's not validated, we're going to validate it. And how many people say all the time, you can't pre-plan residential structures. Well, I differ in that. You can because you run med calls. So our med bags, they have smoke alarms, screwdrivers in them, and, you know, I'm nosy as hell. I'll ask them, hey, you might have to look around. Where you got to sleep at? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? But you know what? Sometimes initially they're caught off guard. And then they go, when you sit and start talking to them, they say, you know, they want cake and cookie breakfast, lunch, supper, or even make you cookies because they're realizing that you really do care. And it's training. That is training. That is the realistic way to do it. You know, everybody is stuck on the word training as one thing. Training is so many different avenues.
Yeah, and I love that you put it that in that context as well. And, you know, I know the old adage, every day's a training day or every call's a training opportunity. And it looks really good and cool bold letters with some fire in the background on Facebook posts. But there's a lot more to, you know, just saying every day's a training day and every call is a training day. There's also that mindset of, you know, of taking those opportunities and everything. For my organization, twice a year, we had over 120 hydrants to go grease, flush, and paint. And we did that twice a year. That was literally 1,000-plus opportunities to work on our size up. It was 1,000-plus opportunities to look at buildings and houses and setbacks. And we took advantage of that. We approached it in that manner, and we did the same thing on our EMS calls. You know, not every call, 3 o'clock in the morning, all I'm going to try and do is get back on the rig to get back in the rack. But during the daytime, if it was one of those days where we didn't have time to do, you know, any kind of real training around the house, then I would take the opportunities at calls to look at houses, construction, you know, what the street looks like. Even at 3 o'clock in the morning, I may just kind of, you know, nudge over to my driver and say, look at these, let's drive down a different way. I want to look at this street now at 3 a.m. And we had streets that during the day, no problem moving a rig. 3 a.m., you may not get a ladder truck down some of those streets. So those, to me, are other examples of training opportunities. But again, the company officer or the senior man on that crew has to have that mindset, whether it is an alarm bell at an apartment complex. I saw a great post from somebody today. They ran an alarm bell and took the opportunity to set up their ladder truck. And what a great opportunity to see what their scrub area, what their reach was going to be with cars all around them and being able to reach certain areas of a three-story garden-style apartment. And, you know, I looked at that and said, yeah, that's exactly the right mindset. But that's something that has to be built through the consistency factor of making guys think about it all the time. I think for the bigger hands-on, we would at least a couple times a month get out of service. And on those days where we went full out, I would run drills in the firehouse. We'd be dressed all the way out, on air, stretching lines. We had the opportunity because we were able to get out service here and there. Even on days where we couldn't get out service and I really wanted to do something a little more intense, even on those type of days, and really what it came down to was my planning and imagination sometimes and a little bit of money every now and then to set up an obstacle, you know, amazing what pallets, a little bit of flex duct can do inside an engine house for a disentanglement hose advancement drill, buddy breathing evolution, rapid intervention evolution, longer stretches going from the front of the house to the rear of the firehouse. All those are opportunities that, again, the consistency factor, the average time for us or for me personally would range from a 30-minute BS session in front of a house to an hour and a half to 2 hours. We did not train for eight. I mean, the rumor around the department was I was training the guys for 8 solid hours every shift, and that was a total lie. But we would.
I love firm believer,
from firm believer and research. Adult learners, believe it or not, your 21-year-old fireman is an adult. Adult learners do better when it's one, it actually applies to what they do, applies to their job, realistic, and it's short and intense. Long, drawn-out firehouse or that, you know, constant interruption type of training just is not the way to go at the company-level type of drills. And there's this opportunity after opportunity in all of our districts, but again, it's a mindset you have to go to work with every day. Think we're making a trend a little bit or changing the tide a little bit when it comes to training, and I see more and more guys doing these type of drills, which is great, where we're doing realistic. And one of the examples, and Roette seemed to give this example at a lot of classes, dragging, and there's some really cool mannequins on the market. There really are. Homewood's got 3 of them. One, it takes like 10 of us to move because it weighs 800 pounds. And they're sand-filled, and they have a little more movability to them. But at the end of the day, you still know going through a drill in Hollywood smoke that you're rescuing a mannequin. I love when I see conferences, departments actually use what it feels like to actually find, locate, and remove an actual person. Because it's a totally different feel moving people around. There's also the realism fact that I can't put my knee on this person's throat while I'm resting. I can't rest on his head. I have to protect him and all that. So I think we're making a trend that direction. Anthony's been to enough of my class to know that if it's not realistic, I probably won't be participating in it. I'm probably hard-headed about my belief in that training's got to be realistic in every aspect of everything we do. And, you know, there's the build-up, you know, stretching lines with shorts and T-shirts is great, but then we got to ramp that up to turnout gear and, all, you know, masking up and add those other elements. But I want to get both y'all's feedback real quick on realistic training. And I'm not talking about burning
time. Go ahead,
Anthony. They lose time. Whoever's listening, anybody who's 1403 guys, I'm not burning tires or furniture. All right, so just please keep that in mind so I don't get a nasty gram from somebody about your, you know, some of the stuff we do. All right, go ahead, Shane.
Yeah. All right, well, so I agree 100%. And I think a lot of the, first and foremost, I think a lot of the negativity and the rumors from what we do is different cadres, is different beliefs, whatever it is. But the guys that are out there doing the realistic training, when, like Todd said, a lot of it can be eliminated by what people perceive. Because all you got to do is reach out and ask us the questions why we do what we do or come to the training. That is first and foremost. Because most of the people that start the bullshit that comes from it, they're the ones that want to, but they don't have the courage, or they don't have the will to, or they don't care enough about the job to come do it. I think that realistic training is absolutely 100%. If you can create controlled environments that are so close to the realistic thing that we do, and you're never going to take and mock it or mimic it to 100%, but if you take and create live fire scenarios, and does it have to be live fire every time? There's a buildup to it. And it also comes with the cadre or the guys are like-minded, just like the ones that were sitting here talking together about it. But if you take and use real people, doesn't mean that I have to put Todd in the bathroom, in a bathtub, in a robe, in the fire and make that the fire room. Right? Think about that. But there's somebody out there that takes and perceives that and goes, yeah, this dude, this crazy son of a gun, was in a bathtub, in a robe, in water, and it was in a fire room. That was said, and I was like, no, he was not. That is the problem that we do to ourselves. Exactly. That is it. That is not. We might push the envelope. and we might be a little bit insane in our passion, but none of us put our brothers or our each other in the fire room. So first, people have to realize that we do know how to push the limit, but we know what not to do as well. So, but what we can do is we can take in, long before it becomes a training class for people to attend, we can go simulate that, just like we've done, just like Ty's done, just like everybody else has done. And how people perceive it determines what people think. But what people don't realize is the realistic side of it is when you absolutely get the opportunity to take somebody, I'm going to ask one question. And a guy got pissed off at me in Florida this past weekend because he was totally out of the realm. And I said, man, let me ask you one question. I said, all these grabs you're talking about. I said, man, I get it. I said, I appreciate your hard work and dedication. But let me ask you one question. How many of them are standing up in the hallway waiting on you to come get them? He said, what do you mean? I said, my point exactly. I said, they're not standing up in the hallway waiting on you to come get them.
Right.
And he said, what does that mean? I said, that means they're horizontal or they're somewhere. I said, kids. I said, their height. I said, there is a difference in their height at 3 feet or 2.5 feet than they are at 6 feet, 2 inches. I said, they're not standing in the hallway waiting, going, hey, buddy, I'm over here, fireman. They're down horizontal or they're in their bed or they're somewhere hidden or they're in their bathtub or they're in a closet. And I said, so we have to train as our tactics that way. I said, I'm waiting on somebody to send me an email or to call me or call me out and say, hey, well, my grandmother's standing up in the hallway and she's sitting there waiting on you. You guys missed her because you guys were taken down below crawling or searching. And I'm like, come on, man. Let's be real. Quit creating such a negative drama over what we're doing to become better. And it's tough because there's a lot of us that do that, and it comes with a lot of criticism. But the truth about it is the people that come and take our classes, we talked about the trends earlier. Guess what? I'm extremely trendy because I follow people like Todd and Anthony, and there's several others that I follow that I'm going to tell you something else that's very important that we're lacking in the fire service today. There's nothing wrong with saying that you want to be like those guys. You want to take and live up to what those guys do, and you don't want to disappoint those guys. The problem is when people say, I don't give a damn what nobody says. Wrong, Jack. You do. You do give a damn what some people say because they influence you, whether it's positive or negative. And that also relates into realistic training because it's a trend to where some people say, well, they're crazy. They go do this. They go do that. Our own state here has condemned what we've done at times because we continue to do what we do. But guess what? The reality of it is as it comes full circle and we don't retaliate with it, we keep doing what we're doing, eventually they realize, oh, well, maybe it is impactful. And sometimes that the negative impact that originally is gained from it, when it comes back around, guess what? It's a reward because eventually you get people back from it. And what they got to understand is they can say all they want to say, but unless they come invest the time, they can understand what it's really like dragging that human body out of a bathtub, out of a bed, off the floor, out of a closet, or that child that is in nature that follows his path of least resistance going to his parents' bedroom by habit, and we don't take the hook and look and catch him or her behind the door, and we messed them. That is preventable in training reps. And it doesn't have to be with live fire. It is routine. It is practice and routine. Anthony Rowett took last year, me and him had a phone conversation. And we was talking about the doors, these forcible entry doors. And he said something that stuck in my mind. He was cooking his boys supper one night. We had about a five-minute conversation. And it didn't hit me till later that evening. And it made me really realize the difference between Shane Bentley's 24, 25-man department versus Mobile's 500-man department. We were talking about forcible entry doors. And he said, nah, man, I don't know how much we use it because we're going to stick to engine work. And I heard that, but it didn't hit me until later that night, and I went, well, my gosh, our engine work is that because search and rescue 100% matters to me more than anything in this job. And anything that prevents that, we have to take and chase perfection at trying to be the best we can be at it. So force of ownership comes before that. And everything we do is off engines is where I work. We don't, you know, and but it didn't hit me till later that night when he said that. And I was like, holy shit. I get what he's saying, but it took me to, in my mindset at that point in time, I really never understood or took in thought enough about the difference between the engine company or the truck company. But the training side of it is the bigger the company, you have to. But you can train through reality and realization, and we don't have to condemn each other by doing it. And that's what we do. And if we create realism and realistic training, and we're using live victims, that means if we're doing that, we got a group of people that's really good. And I will tell you, the guys that I get to work with, I'm lucky I get to hang out with them because they're really good at preventing, making sure nobody gets hurt, but making sure that the student gets the best training ever. And it doesn't take that much. It just takes a little passion and effort.
Yeah, and it should needs to be stated so, you know, anybody listening in doesn't go, oh, my God, they're doing it. Everything is done in an uber-controlled environment. I love that somebody thinks that I was in the fire room, you know, hiding inside a water-filled bathtub to protect myself. That, you know, I can do some crazy stuff, but I'm not going to do anything, you know, stupid because, you know,
but there was never a picture that showed that of you, but somebody, as it translated, somebody ended up saying that, and that's what we do in the fire service. We do a really good job at creating bullshit that's not true. And it's unnecessary because what you were doing is 100% effective and real. Somebody threw that in there just because of their own insecurity or whatever. But everything we do is through practice. We just don't go out and create these damn environments. We take and practice them in a controlled environment to make it as real as it is.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to hit this with you, Roe, because I think everything that I said and Shane said really, you know, talks about the realism of training. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's always, I don't care where you're at, whether you're teaching for a department, teaching within your own organization, from firehouse, those are opportunities to let the guys drag you in your full gear. Dragging a firefighter with all his gear on is a lot different than dragging the man that already has a sling on him or a piece of webbing on him. That's not the most realistic training doing company level. But I want to hit this because I don't want to miss this. I know we've had this conversation. I hear this conversation still continually go on. Guys will go to a training class or go down to a county fire tactics conference in Pensacola, or they'll go to, you know, go somewhere, learn something very new to them, very cool, and they want to make a change in their fire department. And me and you had that opportunity not too long ago when we were in Decatur, Alabama, and working with them on some hose loads. What is your best advice on, I go to this class, I go, oh, my God, it's the coolest thing ever. I want to make this change. What is your best advice for making a change from something you've learned at, you know, through a training program?
Well, I think you got to start small, number one. You can't just go in there and say, hey, we're changing. You know, especially depending on the size of the department. For me to come in and say, hey, we're changing, and I'm going to change 20-something stations and 500 guys, it's never going to happen. They're not going to like the idea. I'm going to feel like I'm banging my head against the wall. No one's going to get anywhere. You start at the company level. You start with one or two people, and you try it. You get other people trying what you learned. If they do it and they have success, they like it now, especially with firemen. If it's easier, if it's more successful and also easier, they're going to like it. But you got to get people doing it. Once they do it, if they like it, the word will spread. They'll start talking about it because then they want the change as well. You've got to change one person at a time. You can't change all of them. Like for us, making the change took years for us to get rid of 1¾ and fog nozzles on standpipe operations with a gated Y. It took years. It wasn't my fight. It wasn't a fight I started. My mentor started it. When he retired, I just kept it going because I knew deep down the change needed to be made. We were doing something that was unsafe. It needed to be done. So we kept fighting it. But it was, if you include the time I fought for and he fought for it, it was probably a 10-year time frame of fighting to get this change made, with resistance from all levels, from firefighters all the way to the top chiefs had resistance to this. But a lot of it came from guys that got outside of the bubble. We had not had a problem with it in our job. Our standpipe fires had typically been smaller fires in apartment buildings, and they got away with it. You know, it just a deviation becoming normal, and it worked. So it's got to work. It's the right thing to do. Because it hadn't failed, there was, why do we want this bigger line that's going to be heavier and harder to pull? A lot of our guys had never used smoothbores. They liked fogs, so they didn't want to make the change. So some guys, through reading, through going to conferences, had said, hey, a change needs to be made. They were pushing. As more people started going to conferences, as the downtown company started changing their stuff with approval from their district chiefs to say, hey, we're the ones dealing with these buildings. We're okay with carrying bigger hose. We know it's what we need to do. That eventually it led to more discussions. It led to the operations chief, because we're so close to Pensacola, going to HROC and coming back and saying, hey, we're putting together a committee to do some evaluations, and we have to make changes. But that was a 10-year process. It didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of your head beating against the wall, but it did work by taking one person at a time with you, getting people to slowly buy in. You're not going to change everybody at once. You're not going to change a whole department, especially if you're an older department, because you've got a lot of tradition in doing it certain ways that have worked. And if you're trying to change something, one, you need to know you're right. You don't just change things that have worked just to change things. There's a reason they're doing things. If things need to change, that's when you can start getting some buy-in. Don't change just to change. Change because it's something better. And then take it slow. Otherwise, you're just going to beat your head against the wall, and you're going to end up stop fighting because you're not making any progress. But if you're taking one person at a time, getting their buy-in, well, they're getting somebody along with them too while you're working on the next person, because they bought in and they like it and they want to see the change and they're spreading the word too. So I think that's the way to success. There's one thing I wanted to add with the reality, though, of what you guys said, is it's about stress to me. So the reality of the training, it doesn't always have to be live fire. It's got to be stressful. That's what changes things. That's what changes thinking from being able to just, hey, I taught you a skill, I can go perform it. When I put you under physical and mental stress is where that thinking changes, and that new skill you just learned, maybe you forget all about it. And the reality of it's what Shane said. My job's a little different than his in the way we work. I'm not going to teach forceful entry because my world's engine work. If you can, the thing with the conference is that's the reality of it. You get guys that are teaching you from experience, especially some departments maybe don't have as much experience, and you're having guys that they're having to teach you from what they know, but they haven't got to do it a ton because that just isn't your department's experiences. It's new types of buildings coming into your area. Well, when you go to these conferences, you're learning from guys that is their reality. They're giving you realistic training because that's their experience. They've done it 100 times, 1,000 times. It's not theory to them. It is experience. So they're being able to teach you reality and give you real information. They've already learned the hard way. Learn from them so you don't go down the same path and have to have the hardships they had to learn what's going to work the best way and then bring that back.
And I agree with you 1,000% right there, Ro. And the stressors can really add to a training program. It's not something you're doing in the firehouse every day, obviously, but it adds to that realism of training, having a guy play the role. Some brothers just did it down there in North Florida where, you know, they're chasing after the firemen and yelling at them and making things difficult. That's the reality of the job on some scenes. So there's a lot of layers to training. There's a lot of different ways to accomplish these goals, from the calls to the alarm bells to getting outside your comfort zone, looking, reading. The avenues are all there. Sometimes we just need to do a much better job of taking advantage of those avenues. We are real quick, I want everybody to just add in their last 2 cents on this, and then we'll do closing here. Your opinion on conferences, Shane, I know probably the answer since you're, hosting one, but outside of the ones you're doing, because those are no fun at all. Those are all work. But from all the events, I know you're just down the Orlando Fire Conference. And let me say this right now, if anybody's never been to, this was my first year ever at Orlando Fire Conference. By far one of the most organized events there. Overall team was absolutely incredible. We never asked for a thing. Everything is almost like they knew what we were wanting. Even during setup, we had water, and we were able to get all the screws and the screw guns. And as we were building out, all throughout the day, they had family members, wives, and their kids out on four-wheelers just, dropping off water. Our bucket was full, and then if the ice melted even a little bit, we got more ice. It was truly an incredible event. The hands-on was incredible. To go around, I was fortunate and blessed enough to help out at one of the, not the site I was helping teaching at, but I was able to break away and go help out the hoarder site. That was absolutely a very cool experience to be part of that and seeing how they do and teach that with some of the best guys in the country over there teaching, including Tim Klett from FDNY, retired from FDNY just recently. So highly recommend that one. Obviously, county fire tactics is changing. There is going to be still the command officer boot camp in May. Then we'll move into water on the fire, which is assault hands-on. We do hands-on, but not, wide open. The absolute last H, full-blown, nothing but HROC, high-rise operations conference this December. I couldn't be more excited about that. It's going to be the biggest and the best one ever done, being the last one. There's going to be some surprises there at that one that, if you're not registered or you were kind of leery about going, trust me, you want to be at this last HROC. It's going to be a monster event. And then we're going to be moving right into the conference. I don't think he's added a name to it yet, but that's going to be towards the end of January, February timeline. And basically it's going to be every available firefighter taking over the entire Pensacola Beach for, three solid days, four solid days. So that's going to be incredible. I do want to plug out that there's just an unbelievable host of conferences coming up. There's one in Laurel Oak, Michigan called Great Lakes Hot. You can check out more information on that one on my website. Very unique. We were very fortunate to bring in the people we're bringing in, and we still got people on standby alert one for that in case the numbers keep growing, in which, we're almost half sold out for that event already. So, but my personal opinion on these fire conferences is not just the training you're getting, which is unbelievable because you're getting, one-on-one time, the smaller conferences, especially like it at Pensacola, like at the Michigan one, like the ones that Shane does. You're getting one-on-one opportunities with, some of the best guys in the business. And very fortunate and blessed I can sometimes just stand on the sidelines and listen to two district chiefs from the Houston Fire Department tell you what it's like to, make rescues and to lose guys and be parts of those type of things. And you're not getting that simply by, looking at a 10-question test on your computer screen. You have to get outside your comfort zone. And I can never, ever promote going to these conferences. Isaac Fraser and Into the Job up there is that's on my next year list to go and attend that one. I'm truly looking forward to that. There's some really cool things getting ready to launch off in the Oklahoma area. The opportunities are definitely there. Check out firenuggets.com, and they list, not every conference, they list a whole bunch of conferences on their website. Very cool site. So again, the opportunities are there, but my personal feeling is you should, if you can get to one, a local one even, once a year, you're doing such a service for yourself, your family, and your fellow firefighters. And I want, Shane, your opinion on attending. And look at it, and I'm looking for more of the attendance. I get more out of going, and as a student, I'm always a student at these events. And the instruction part's great, and I love that part of it. But my favorite part is sitting in the rooms and listening to all the different lectures. And I've got two notebooks full of notes just from the past year by sitting there listening and learning from some of the most incredible people in the country.
I couldn't agree with you 100%. It's, you know, years ago, I wanted to be the instructor, right? I wanted to come up and I wanted to be like those guys that really made an impression on me. But now I find a lot of fulfillment and enjoyment, and I value how much I learn as being a student and having guys and being able to take and have guys and the department that I work for invest in paying for our members and for guys to come up and teach us. So we've been very productive and successful the last couple of years, but we come to the agreement decision in December that, hey, let's do March and let's take a year off. One, to work on our own stuff, but two, so the agreement when we started this was there was four or five of us, five predominantly, that said, hey, you know, at least once a year, we're going to go somewhere together outside of anywhere near what we do and go take and challenge ourselves and learn from people. So we didn't get to do that last year, and it's our own fault. We didn't uphold our own obligation, and that was, to me, that's just as important. But there is one thing that stuck out in my mind this past weekend. When you hear a lot of things, you meet a lot of people, and you see a lot of the same faces. And you have a lot of the same conversations, and when you see them two or three weekends in a row, and Todd was 100% correct about Orlando Fire Conference. Man, I was just amazed at how big and how organized that situation, that organization and the situation was, because, man, it was really cool to be. But like I just want to tell Todd Shepard, and Todd Shepard's a really good friend of mine, but to sit and watch Todd Edwards talk about stretching bundles and crosslays, right? That's what we run and pull. But I sat there and I watched it, and I sat there and I kept on, and I was like, man, that's so cool to be able to pick those nuggets up. And I'm not fluffing him because he's talking. I'm just telling you that's how important it is when you have mentors. Guy asked me in Florida last week. He said, man, he said, who's your mentors? I said, what's your phone number? Because I'm going to send you this page of them. These are the guys that absolutely have affected my fire service career and guys that I enjoy listening to, watching, following. And these are guys that I simply do not want to let down. And so we've chosen to take a few months off and go back and educate ourselves and learn more and try to make ourselves better to where we can provide a better product. But I heard a guy say down there in Florida this week, so man, the conference scene's getting old or saturated. I said, you're right about one thing. I said, it's very saturated. I said, but it's saturated with a lot of knowledge and wealth. And I said, you get to choose. And I said, which you don't realize is if you go to every fire conference, man, you're very fortunate. But there's a lot of guys and members at fire departments never get the opportunity to go to one a year. They have to pay out of their pocket, and they might not have that. I said, so I've seen this same guy several times, and it's just gotten boring to him. But at the same time, does he put in the effort that me or you or some of these other hard chargers would, or some of these other guys that just want to be there? And I told him, I said, man, don't have that attitude. I said, you got to realize not everybody gets the opportunity to come to this like you do. And it's the impact that the conferences can have can be career-changing, can be fire service-changing, but what it, man, it gives people the opportunity to just go meet different people and meet others and build bonds and relationships to where – the next time they get to go somewhere, hey, man, how you doing? I ain't seen you. That's that simple handshake, right? That's the hand. To me, that one handshake that came from the insurance fire markers, to me, that signifies the whole fire service. And I wish people really understood what that meant. And to me, that is, I look at that handshake in the conference or the training class or the speaker. I look at that interlocked hand is everything about the fire service. It very much takes and certifies everything that we do. And it's just simply, we can correct or create what people think, but we better not take advantage of them. If we do correct and create it, we better make sure that we're doing it for their best intentions and not take advantage of them. And the conference is, it's an opportunity for anybody, and it's an opportunity for others to learn. And so I think being a student is the most important thing, Adam, and that's what we're going back to doing.
Yeah, agree. And that's why I said I take advantage of those opportunities. And I tell students all the time, I've never left one of these events where I probably didn't learn more than I gave in a lot of ways. And I'm always blown away by that. It definitely, you know, keeps me more than a little bit motivated to be able to do those things. So, Anthony, we'll start with you on your closing, and we're definitely right there at our time where we're in. We're pretty good about this. We usually don't run over too bad, and I want to have Rohit give out his closing remarks on anything he wants to give out on, and then we'll roll into Shane, and then I'll close out, and we'll call it an evening. Go ahead, Roh.
First off, Shane, thanks for taking your time again and coming on the show, spending a couple hours with us. I know your time is important. I appreciate it. My closing remark is just understand the importance of training. It's going to make it's what's going to make the outcome what it's going to be. If you're not prepared and you're just hoping to be good on game day, you're probably not going to be that good. So get out there and train. If you're going to work and you're working a 24, what's an hour? What's 2 hours to go work with the guys? It doesn't have to be discipline or punishment. It can be fun. You can train and improve and still have a fun time with the guys and a camaraderie and have fun. So make it fun, make it real, and get better every day you go to work. As far as the conferences, you guys really hit on the big thing, how much you learn when you go. Understand there's also a networking aspect that's huge. The people you get to know and become friends with, I have so many friends in the fire service that I would never know if it wasn't for the conferences because they don't work in my fire department. And what that gives me is when I have a question, I've called Todd 100 times and said, hey, what would you do? I've called guys in New York all over the country and said, hey, what do you think about this? What would you do here? I got a question for you. And they can give me their experience, and I can relate that with mine for what would work best for my job or what we're trying to do. And it gives you other resources to learn from. So if you can get to a conference, if you haven't been to one before, just try it. You're going to be amazed at what you learn and also the people you get to know. So try to get better every day. Get outside of the bubble of your own department. You can learn a lot from other people. Sometimes maybe all of it doesn't work to where it's going to be the best thing for your job, but you can learn something from everybody. So go out, learn from other people's experiences, and then come back and figure out what works best for you. Take what works for you, and the rest, you still learn something, but you will learn something from everybody that you can have a way that it impacts your career, and it improves the way you operate on the fire ground or in training and things like that. So get out, get better every day, and then if you can, get to a conference, get to a class that's outside of your bubble, and you can learn from some people with different experiences than just your department. I'm like you guys said, I'm all for the different conferences, get to see a bunch of them. Kind of crazy coming up. Like Todd said, a bunch of the places he's going to be are looking forward to be. I got the same ones. If you just go to portcityfiretraining.com, they're all listed there where you can find us. A lot of them are me and Todd are together for a bunch of them. Me and Mick that's been on the show with Top Floor Tactics, we're together for a bunch of them. So that's really all I got. Shane, thanks again for your time.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a privilege to be on here with both of you because as you were sitting there talking, Anthony, and within 24 hours, I've called the both of you, and it really just hit me. I called the both of you, and and you both helped me out. You know, whether it was training at my department last night or whether it was advice I needed today. And that truly does come from relationships that's built through the fire service, whether it's through the conference or through the mentorship. And that is a reward. And, you know, it's people's got to realize is, you know, what we're expected to do as a firefighter is people consider that like the realm is really big, but I consider it as, man, you just do the right thing. You know, be prepared, try to do the best you can to help as many people as you can anytime, and understand and grow. Understand, it's like fire behavior, right? It's like the new guy has learned about fire behavior and all this bullshit that IFSTA says. But the reality of it is, and I'm not knocking IFSTA, the reality of it is it changes at every department. And that success of that guy is determined by the Todd Edwards, the Anthony Rowetts, the Scott Sanders, the Webb Marshalls, all these guys out there. There's so many good guys that care. And the basics and the boundaries determined by what the mindset is and how much the job matters and how much the relationship is. And, you know, all we got to do is take in – somebody's got to show us that it's okay to care about each other and have courage and consistently work just a little bit harder, just a little bit. I think we talked about that at the beginning of the show, work just a little bit harder, just to be a little bit better every day and watch the relationships that develops from that. And so, thank you both for allowing me to be on this show with you tonight. It was it's truly an honor. Thank you.
No, thank you. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
I'm gonna keep mine short and brief, guys. And I think Anthony hit the best. The classes are always phenomenal. The hands on, do the best. You always see, you know, all these training opportunities. Whether you bring a couple guys into your own department, or you know send a couple guys to some place, you know. And again, let me make sure I do not overlook promoting, you know, the fire department training network up there in Indy, and what he's done up there at his site is incredible, and you can definitely look at him and look at everything they're doing up there from a realism standpoint. It's the most realistic training you can ever attend. The networking cannot be overstated. I love that Shane brought that up. That he spoke to me today. He needs a little bit of advice about something, and he spoke to Roette today. And those are the relationships that build attending and getting to know the American Fire Service, not just your four walls of it. So look out for us. We'll be around. If we can ever be of any assistance, I'm fairly easily contacted. The website is firelifetrainingassociates.com. My email is Todd Edwards, the number 6, at Yahoo. And we're open. I'm the most anal person on earth about email. I'll check it as soon as I get off the call here, and if I missed while I was on this, and see if I need to reply to anybody. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back soon, and we appreciate the support. Have a great evening. Thank you.
Have a good night. Y'all be good.
See you guys.